So I like to think I have things together. I like to think that I'm respectable, right? I mean, I'm a pastor, I got white robes on. I mean, I'm presentable. I took a shower this morning. The Mount Cross showers are horrible, and yet I still took a shower. I got up when my alarm went off almost every day of the week. I can even adjust to changing situations. I'm flexible. I'm doing pretty good. For example, Wednesday of this week, this past week, Rachel texts me. My wife texts me and she says, "Hey, one of my coworkers has an early meeting with me on Thursday morning, and so she has to commute pretty far, so I've invited her to stay at the house on Wednesday night so that when we have this 7:30 a.m. meeting, she doesn't have to get up super early and drive." And she had just gotten back into town because she was visiting one of the marine mammal facilities in Hawaii. So she just flown in. She was tired. "We're going to have her spend the night. I hope that's okay. She said, "We're going to go to dinner first, and then we'll be home." And I said, that's fine. And then I realized that before we have her over, we should probably clean the house a little bit. So I get on the phone with my son, Carl, and I'm like, "Carl, you're home. Start cleaning the house. We're going to have house guests. I'm going to get out of the office here and get home, and I'll help you clean up." And so we start pulling this thing together while my wife and her coworkers at dinner, and I get home. I'm finishing cleaning, and I finally get to the last room of the house, and we're doing pretty good. The house is smelling fresh. We vacuumed up all the dog hair. This is going well. Like, we're going to pull this off before they get home, and I'm feeling really good about this. And then I went upstairs, and I said to Carl, "Okay, here's the deal. I'm gonna do the last room. I need to clean the bathroom." And so I started cleaning the bathroom. And in the midst of cleaning the bathroom, I realized that I'm not respectable. I'm a monster. I looked at the bathroom and I thought, "Oh my gosh, I'm nowhere close to being respectable. I need to clean the bathroom more. It's disgusting. I don't know what's wrong with me." And this bubble burst of being presentable, being good, was totally, I mean, I had one of two options at that point when I was thinking about this. Either if I'm going to keep this illusion of being respectable, I either have to clean the house every time someone comes over or be completely embarrassed. I know the rest of you keep perfect, immaculate homes. I'm being a little vulnerable here, so I don't want you to judge me. But I realized it was like a perspective check for me, right? Like, oh, I'm just like everybody else. I have to clean the bathroom. And I spared you. I mean, you like my gloves, by the way? That was a selfie right there. It's not. I don't have a bathroom nearly as, I think that's a thermostat in the, I don't even know what that is. But I spared you from a picture of toilet cleaning, okay? So just consider yourself thankful this day. And so we're going to talk a little bit about humility. And the importance of humility. And humility isn't thinking too highly of yourself, but at the same time, it isn't thinking about less of yourself either. Humility is the ability to be who you are and point to the one who made you. I mean, for example, humility is not needing to be or not having the need to be more than you are. Can you imagine that? I'm not saying we don't occasionally need to stretch ourselves, because we should stretch ourselves occasionally, but we should never pretend to have status when we don't. I'd even go farther with that. I'd even tell you, even when you do have some sort of status, you shouldn't use it on others. I mean, listen to this. Jesus says, and we heard this in the gospel reading today in Luke 14, when he was talking about, hey, look, if even you're invited to a dinner party, you know, don't sit at the head table, you know. Sit somewhere lower, because whoever exalts himself will be humbled, and whoever humbles himself will be exalted. I mean, think about this. At Thanksgiving dinner, if you're ever at like a big family Thanksgiving dinner, are you going to immediately go sit at the head table, or are you going to go sit at the kids' table, right? I mean, I think that's the question that Jesus is getting at. And I will tell you that Jesus is all over sitting at the kids' table. I mean, it's not just about where you sit, though. It's cultivating an attitude of humility. And guess what follows when you cultivate humility? Contentment. Think about that. That when you cultivate humility, contentment follows. That we, it's kind of the attitude of that when we're at Safeway, or you're at, Lucky's, or whatever grocery store you shop at, that when you get into line and it's super long, that you fully expect someone to open a new line for you because you don't have the time to wait with all the rest of the other people waiting in line. We shouldn't demand preferential treatment of any kind. So when we cultivate humility, contentment follows. Because you're not trying to be more than you are. And who doesn't want to be more content, more happy, have more joy in their life? And being humble isn't about putting expectations that others should kind of bend or cave to your will, and you're disappointed when someone doesn't do the things that you want them to do. But not only that, humble people identify with others. Even Jesus did this. Our identity, obviously, is found in Christ as Christians, right? And Jesus is totally the face of humility. And I don't know if you realize this, but let's connect the dots, that God identifies with you more than anyone else in the world. He knows your struggles. He doesn't judge you for them. And he loves you anyways. And that's called compassion. He even suffers with us. Paul says in Philippians, Jesus, being in the very nature of God, did not consider equality with God as something to be grasped, but made himself nothing. Can you imagine God emptying his perfection? And in some degree, even his power, because remember when Jesus would heal, what would he do? He'd pray to the Father. He'd rely on the Father's power, not his own power, to show us his humility. And he emptied himself to draw close to us. He made himself nothing so that we could see that God is actually approachable, which is totally amazing. And because of all this, his death and resurrection, it tells us that we are his. The most humble servant ever to live on planet Earth. And not only that, but he says, look, if you want to follow me, I want you to emulate me. I want you to reflect that humility to others and not put on airs and not demand certain rights because somehow you've earned it or you deserve it. In Galatians, Paul says to us, he says, you, my brothers and sisters, you were called to be free, but don't use your freedom to indulge in the sinful nature. Rather, use your freedom to serve one another in love, because the entire law of the Old Testament is summed up in a single command: love your neighbor as yourself. Now, if you wanted to say that differently, what I'd tell you is don't use the freedoms that you have to feed your ego. Don't use the freedoms that you have to insist that others treat you better than everybody else, but to serve in love. Now, this isn't in the Bible, but I totally resonate with this. Pride is concerned with who is right. Humility is concerned with what is right. It reminds me of these two young ladies. Her name was, one of them was Karen Poe, and the other one is Esther Kim, and they were best friends growing up. They were also fierce competitors, and their sport of choice was Taekwondo. And they were so good at it that they were actually trying out for the 2000 Olympics, where Taekwondo was actually featured for the first time in the Summer Olympics. And so as they were competing, they were best friends, but they were in two different classes. And I don't know how they designated them, but they were in two different classes. So they hardly ever competed against each other. And in their pre-Olympic trials, they were both favored to go to the 2000 Olympics. But there was a snag in that plan, as they were doing so well, was that the United States decided instead of sending 4 weight classes, they were only going to send 2. So they ended up being combined into the same weight class or whatever it was, so that they would eventually, if they advanced, they'd have to compete against each other. But they were best friends. So in the pre-trials, as they were qualifying for the Olympics, the one in front, Kay, injured her kneecap. And she was in a lot of pain. But she didn't give up. And even though she was injured, she kept fighting through the match. And she won. It's like you, Melody. You could have quit, but you're like, I'm going to persevere, right? This is it. This is your story right here. And so she won her match, which means she was going to advance and had only one more round to go. Well, the same was true for her friend, Esther. Esther won her match, and all she had to do now was go to the finals against her friend, Kay. I mean, this was a free ticket to the Olympics because her friend was injured. All she had to do was show up, and she could totally take her out, right? I mean, this is like a Karate Kid moment here, right? But Esther did the most amazing thing. She resigned. She forfeited her match so her friend Kay, the one who got hurt, would end up going to the Olympics and that she would have time to heal before going to the Olympics. So she went up and she signed the scorecard, even though she would have won that match hands down with her friend being injured. And when Esther told Kay, she protested. She said, "You can't do that." And Esther said, "Don't you dare argue with me about this. Don't you think that I'm throwing away my dreams? I'm not, because I'm putting my dreams in you." So officially, the way the protocol goes, she signed the scorecard, and then they both had to come to the mat and bow to each other. And they're both crying. They love each other. They're best friends. They're hugging. They're crying. Even the referees are crying. There's a standing ovation. It was a very touching moment. And Esther, who resigned, the one in the back, resigned or forfeited this match and not to go to the Olympics, said this: "There's more than one way to be a champion." Do you see what humility does? It sees what is right and leans into it. Humility doesn't seek to elevate their position or use it against someone else. Instead, humility lifts up others. I mean, isn't that what Jesus did? He didn't elevate his position. He didn't use his power to insist that people bow to him. He didn't say, "Look, I'm God. And you need to worship me, and you need to, I'm going to have a throne, and you're going to do the things." He didn't do that at all. He was a servant. He embodied humility. So he's the one I need to look to. He's the one that reminds me how I need to treat others when I think about the way he graciously has treated me, to forgive me, to encourage me, and to keep pushing me. He's the one that we all need to go to. When I think about the humility of Jesus, I can't help but think about the story of this student. His teacher one day, this is Mrs. Smith, called Mark, this 9-year-old, this kid's mother one day in the middle of the afternoon. And it's, I don't know, if you've had kids, if you get a call from the teacher, you know what that means, right? I mean, it's hardly ever. Do you call? Is it always good when you call? Right. The teacher in the room is like, "Yeah, when you're calling home." So the teacher, Mrs. Smith, is calling about Mark, and Mom all of a sudden is making this assumption that, "Oh, this is not good." And the teacher says, "Look, something unusual happened in class today. Your son did something that surprised me so much that I needed to call you immediately." I mean, Mom's like, "Oh, what did he do?" I know that's what my mom would be thinking. The teacher said, "Nothing has ever happened like this in all my years of teaching. I mean, this is red flags, right? Two red flags going. I was doing a lesson on creative writing, and I do this lesson every year, and I always tell the story of the ant and the grasshopper. So this is third grade. And the story, if you know it, is, and if you don't, it's this. The grasshopper and the ant, they're friends, and during the summer, the ant works really hard storing food all summer for the winter, and the grasshopper is just like, you know, hey, it's all good, it's summer, it's great, let's have fun, you know, let's just hang out. And the ant keeps working hard and storing away food, and the grasshopper's like, hey, the weather's great, I'm going to lay out all day and get a tan. And fall comes, and it gets colder, and finally winter comes, and the ant is down in his ant hole with all of his food stored up for the winter, and the grasshopper comes knocking and says, look, hey, it's cold, I'm hungry, I didn't put any food, can you help me out? And the teacher says, here's where we don't tell the rest of the story, and the creative writing assignment is this, is that now you as students have to finish the story. If you were the ant, what would the ant do when the grasshopper, who did nothing all summer, like the whole summer was Labor Day for the grasshopper, while the ant labored, how would you finish the story? And so this young man, who Mrs. Smith is calling about, she said, well, your son Mark raised his hand when I gave the assignment to finish the story. And he said, can I draw a picture? It's third grade, right? And the teacher said, well, yes, you can draw a picture, but you still need to write the ending to the story. And once again, she said, in all my years that I've taught this lesson, he had the most unexpected response. And she said, you know, some students over the years said, well, the ant shared some of his food with the grasshopper and they rationed it. And so they both ate less, but they both, you know, made it through the winter. Some of the more hard-edged kids were like, no, Mr. Grasshopper, you were lazy, you didn't do anything, you will starve, and that's just the way it is, get out of here, I'm calling the police. She said, but your son ended the story in a way that I've never, ever heard it. And this is what he wrote. So the ant gave all of his food to the grasshopper. And the grasshopper lived through the winter, but the ant died. And the picture that he drew at the bottom of his creative writing assignment was three crosses. A reminder of the one who had all the power, deserved all the glory, all the elevation of his name, but chose to be humble and give everything away to us. But Jesus' resurrection reminds us and promises us not just an example of how to be humble, but also the power to be humble, all the while reflecting his love. Amen.